Locked On Dynasty Fantasy Basketball. Get it, India.
Hi guys, let's look at another Dynasty trade in today's little Dynasty video and Dynasty podcast if you're listening to it audio-wise. We're looking at a trade that went down in one of my Dynasty leagues. It's heading into its third season now, the Red Rock 30 Bernard King division, which is a 30-team Dynasty league, a 9-category head-to-head league. No penalties on guys that you can keep, no salary cap, no anything like that. You can keep guys for as long as you like, a 13-man roster as well. With that squad, and this was a trade that was done by a player who was taking over a new team. It was actually executed before the rookie draft, and this league has a 2-round 60-pick rookie draft in which only rookies can be drafted. So that's it. You'll see that trade that went down here before that draft. I thought it was a good idea to go back and have a look at this deal. Definitely a case of playing for the future or playing for the win now. So let's have a look at the details of this deal that did go down in the Bernard King division. It was just two teams involved, and on Fantrax, if you are playing Dynasty, you can actually do three-team trades on Fantrax. Had a couple of those go down in a few of my leagues, which is really interesting to see. Team 1, who was the team who was taking over a new squad, they traded away Lauri Markkanen and the 18th pick in the 2018 rookie draft, which ended up being Ali Okobo. Now, that pick was then... The team 2 who received pick 18 didn't end up using pick 18 to pick. It got traded on, but it ended up being Ali Okobo. So we're going to use Ali Okobo for a comparison here. They also gave up a 2019 second round pick. So yeah, that's probably going to be at the back end of that second round, in between 45 to 60 would be my guess. Of course, we don't know that. Don't know that for sure just at this point, but if I have a look at the projected standings on Basketball Monster for this league, we can have a look at how it all pans out and where this team may end up being, and they're projected to be the second best team. So we're looking at a pick, let's say at worst case scenario, from 50 to 60 in the second round. So not all that valuable of a pick. In exchange for Lauri Markkanen and pick 18 in that second rounder, they got back DeAndre Jordan, they got back Nikola Mirotic, and they got back two first-round draft choices, the 2020 and 2022 first-round picks from a team who projects to be, I guess, a little bit better than mid-table, maybe about between the 10th to the 14th best team for this coming season. So we're talking about if things hold and they get development from these guys like Markkanen, they're getting that trade, maybe you're talking about first-round picks in the 15 to 22 sort of a zone. The market and injury hurts in this season and helps the value of that draft pick for this coming year as well, but that is taken into consideration there. So sort of a mid-round, two first-round mid-round picks, plus DeAndre Jordan, plus Nikola Mirotic. So for a start, Team 1 is getting back four assets versus giving up three assets. They're giving up four useful assets as opposed to two useful assets in that second round pick, which is not all that useful going from Team 1. So really it comes down to how highly are you valuing Lauri Markkanen. That pick 18 that Team 1 acquired, they also got that pick by trade. They had pick 11 and they traded away pick 11 and got back Chetty Osman and pick 18, which I think is a clear win for them in that scenario. Pick 11 ended up being Miles Bridges, and then they used that pick 18. So in the end, they traded away Markkanen and pick 11 for Chetty Osman plus the rest of this haul as well, which I think is a pretty decent haul to get back. So that's the framework of that trade. Let's have a look and see how it all makes sense in terms of value of these guys. Now, Lauri Markkanen is the best prospect in this group. He's 21 years of age. Of course, he's dealing with that elbow injury, which is probably going to cost him 15 to 20 games for this upcoming season. But this trade that was made is obviously about acquiring Markkanen for the long term. His PIPM numbers aren't as impressive as what you might think. A peak PIPM, according to Jacob Goldstein, of 0.40, but I still do think he does have top 25 potential. I don't think he's ever going to be a top 10 sort of a guy. The lack of defensive stats from Markkanen, as I always say, will hold him back. He might not be a guy who ever averages over a block per game, might not ever be a power forward center guy who gets a high field goal percentage as well. He'll hit threes, he'll score, the rebounds are pretty good, more impressive than I thought they'd be for this guy coming out of college. But realistically, he looks to be a more dynamic offensive Domantas Sabonis, a poor defensive stats guy who can score, hit threes well. That's obviously different to Sabonis. high free throws, but the lack of defensive numbers, the lack of assists makes him, maybe it's Ryan Anderson-ish type, but a better offensive, more dynamic, more versatile offensive type of player, a better rebounder as well. So that's why his peak is higher there. I think he's probably a top 70, maybe pushing top 60 guy for this coming season as well. But you might need a couple of seasons to get to that top 25, and it's going to require an increase in efficiency pretty significantly for Markkanen to actually get there. Now, the other guy given away, which I'm using Okobo there as pick 18, as I said, this trade was made before the draft selection. Okobo is going into his age 21 season. His peak PIPM is only a negative 0.98, which is not horrible. It's a guy you could consider a starter at some point, but I'm not sure his peak upside is massive. According to my rough calculations, we're talking top 150. I could see him pushing a little bit higher than that. At this point, I don't think he's going to be the starter for this upcoming season. He may be in the rotation, but not necessarily. They may have Shaq Harrison backing up Devin Booker there for the majority of the time. It could be Okobo, it could be Melton taking some of that time. And I like what Okobo can do. He can score, he's efficient, he gets steals at a decent rate, he can get assists, the free throws are fine. I think he's got some upside, and maybe that top 150 is a little bit low. Maybe he can push into the top 100. So it's not a terrible asset, but in the end, the team that got Okobo in that trade didn't, or got that draft pick, didn't end up using that draft pick to make that pick to get Ali Okobo. On the other side, you've got the two best assets in this deal, Nikola Mirotic and DeAndre Jordan. Mirotic is age 27, a peak PIPM of 1.05, which is for this season. Decline probably coming after that. I think he can top out as a top 40 guy this season if everything goes right and the minutes are up. Not sure he gets there, but that's probably where he tops out. Whereas DeAndre Jordan, age 30, a peak PIPM of plus 2.08, by far the biggest of this group. That is for this season, and the drop-off, I think, comes pretty quickly for DeAndre. I think he's got top 25 peak for this season, but of course, that's talking punt free throws. He is a top 20 type of a talent in this sort of a league for this season coming. And as you said, like, he had the 11th pick this team won this season, so a team that was out of the playoffs last season, but based on the moves that he made, he is looking to be the second highest team in terms of projected standings, which is obviously, you know, pretty impressive to get up to that, to get up to that level making those moves. So it is a clear win now move, and it's a big gain for this coming season. We're talking about, you know, gaining more points per game, a massive increase in rebounds, maybe an extra 6 rebounds per game in that, those guys you've got there, more blocks, higher field goal percentage, but you are losing in assist numbers most likely. You're losing in free throw percentage significantly. You're probably getting less threes, although Mirotic could actually win that threes category for you on his own. But that big bump in blocks, in rebounds, and field goal percentage is massively significant. And that's what you can see, that league value gain of 0.7. The punt value is just taking turnovers away, so even increasing the turnover value there. You're getting two guys that are going to be every night parts of the rotation with pretty significant minutes, and that rebound boost and field goal percentage boost and block boost, even though Jordan's block numbers did decrease pretty significantly this season, it does help this team quite a bit. They have one of these, they're probably the best rebounding team in the entire league. One of the top three in field goal percentage, one of the top, I think they are the number one team in terms of blocks as well. Their threes were never strong. They're not great, but they're not terrible because Mirotic helps there. Their scoring is up in the top zone as well. So they're looking pretty strong for a team for this coming season. So in terms of for this year, there's a clear winner here, and that is the team that's getting Mirotic and Jordan in this deal as well. But they also got some first round picks out of it too, which is not a horrible, you know, I think in the end, I always like to try and win now most of the time in Dynasty League. Jordan might not be this guy anywhere past this season. I think he's probably got 2 years left, maybe. Mirotic probably got 3 years at this sort of level, maybe 4 years. I think he might age off, you know, it's might struggle with his aging a little bit once he gets to age 30, but he is still only 27. But you got the guys that push you to try and win this season, which is huge. He also made moves to get Ricky Rubio this season. He traded Fred VanVleet to get Rubio, so really going all in on winning this season. Plus, you do get two first-round assets out of it as well, which might not be great, but you can still, you know, at least add that to it and have two first-round picks in the coming seasons. I think that's value. Now, the person acquiring Markkanen, they must have been pretty high on getting him, obviously, and think that he does have the ability, as I suggested, to be that guy who does become that top 25 player. But in the end, you're acquiring Markkanen, plus you're giving up, and you get a first-round pick back, but you're giving up two first-rounders as well. So there is a significant risk in that strategy for this team. Now, again, that they did make other moves and didn't end up keeping that pick 18, but it's still a risk to give up as many assets in that trade as they did, and it's really putting a big premium on what Markkanen is going to be able to do, and having faith in him being able to do it. So you know whether he can actually get to that level or not remains to be seen, and that's I guess the big question mark that we're gonna have with this team and how this trade pans out. But that is the trade. That is how it all went down. Give me your opinions to this in the comments below. Who won the deal? What side would you like to be on? But I think that Mirotić Jordan side plus getting two first round picks is probably the way to go. So that's the way that I would lean in this dynasty deal. See you guys. Hi guys, Josh Lloyd here, answering one of your questions regarding Dynasty Leagues. The Dynasty League stuff, we're going to continue doing that obviously through the season, but the player spotlights that you guys would have seen in the regular podcast are going to be as short little segments here in the Dynasty podcast, focusing more on their long-term value. So that's what's going to be happening during the season as we do player spotlights, and we'll end up getting through quite a lot of players. Still be taking some requests for those guys as well as the season it kicks off. But now I've got a question that has come through from a follower on Twitter, and that follower is Thomas Pettersson. Thomas, I'm going to hope that you're from Iceland, because for some reason my son's favorite country is Iceland, and I see the sun at the end of your name, and I'm just hoping, so let me know whether that is the case. His question is, I'm just curious to how you judge players differently when it comes to dynasty versus redraft leagues. How much different would your projections be if it were based on dynasty outlook and not just next year? It's a good question, Thomas, and I get it all the time regarding how you view guys in dynasty versus how you view those guys. Now, we're still working on ways to algorithmically and mathematically be able to project those players. That's why I talk a lot about the Jacob Goldstein's peak PIPM and try and tie that through to fantasy value. And I'm still working on systems to make sure this works correctly. But what you'll find in dynasty leagues when you're doing initial drafts in dynasty leagues is that people go super hard on young players, unproven young players. You'll see guys like DeAndre Ayton, Luka Doncic, taken inside the top 20 in many of these scenarios. You'll see guys like Trae Young inside the top 40, and players who are probably getting chosen too high based on what they may become. If I use one of the new Dynasty Leagues that I started up this season, the Red Rock 12-team Dynasty League Derek Harper division, and look at some of the values of where these young players went, you had it's a pretty standard top of the draft. Nikola Jokic going at number 3 maybe was somewhat of a surprise to some people. But you had Devin Booker going at 14, Donovan Mitchell going at 15. But then you look at guys like Luka Doncic at 22, Jason Tatum at 23, the future MVP Kyle Kuzma went at 24, Triple J Jaren Jackson went at 25, and that's the same team that took Kuzma. So they went with Davis at pick 1. And then at the end, pick 24, 25 with Jaren Jackson, you had the Baptist John Collins at 27. I'm just picking these young guys that stand out. Lowry Markkanen at 35, DeAndre Ayton at 39, which actually is a pretty good pick, I think, at that spot. Markel Fultz at 47. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson at 48. Guys taking some pretty big steps up in terms of where they're not necessarily projected to go, but how they're viewing them for long-term dynasty value and taking a risk in that sort of a situation. So in terms of how I judge them, I tend to look at dynasty leagues with a 2 to 3 year window normally, and look at guys who I think are going to be able to produce pretty solid numbers in those times. Now, a lot of rookies in that time won't be producing solid numbers in 2 to 3 years. And I'm not saying that I avoid rookies, because honestly, if they're there, I'm looking at them. But I'm not taking someone at pick 20 who hasn't played a game in the NBA yet. I'd rather get the guy who I think for the next 3 years can be a top 20 player. Now, if a guy is, say, 30, 29 maybe, then in terms of looking at it from a 2 to 3 year window, I'm starting to downgrade that player, because that's when declines can happen. I also look at the way that guys' contracts are structured a little bit as well. Are they becoming a free agent that might see them struggle to get a role moving forward? What's their demand going to be like? Are they going to be getting a contract? Are they going to still be an in-demand player? In general, players are improving through to about age 27, 28, and then they keep about the same through about 29, maybe 30, a drop off, but after 30, declines come, and they can start to come pretty quickly. So when you're looking at those sort of players who aren't the elite of the elite, LeBron James, James Harden, those sort of guys, then you're looking for declines around that area. So guys, rightfully so, like Chris Paul, are suffering pretty significant drop-offs in this situation. And Chris Paul, in this, you know, to reference back to this dynasty draft, he went at pick 44, but you can still get value. Someone like Paul George, who's still in the middle of his prime, went at pick 19 in this draft, where realistically you could be looking at him at the end of the first round as a relatively young player. We had Jimmy Butler go at pick 28, and that was before we knew about this situation in Minnesota. And I guess because he is 29, then maybe you're looking at two, you know, prime years. And that's a fair enough type of decision to look at guys in that sort of regard who may start to drop off at that point in their career. But in terms of, you know, projecting guys, you're looking at players who have a peak at around age 27, 28. You do want to factor in youth, but you don't want to go too hard on youth a lot of the time, because we, especially guys who haven't played in the NBA, we have seen time and time again lottery picks screw up and not be good. And if you're taking that, you know, risk on them, you're taking Marvin Bagley at pick number 60, when we don't know if he's going to be the guy that is busts out and becomes not worth a top 200 pick. You can go back through any NBA draft and have a look at these guys and find players who struggle. You know, the last season, Markelle Fultz, we know how bad he was. Josh Jackson, he also wasn't good. De'Aaron Fox also wasn't good. Frank Ntilikina struggled. Zach Collins at pick 10, he wasn't, you know, a great option, but he probably would have been picked in the top 100 in a dynasty draft. The year before, Dragan Bender at pick 4, that didn't work out. Marquise Chris at pick 8, also didn't work out. Thon McCurr at pick 10, I don't think that's going to work out. And these are all guys that are getting over, they get overvalued. The 2015 draft, Jahlil Okafor at number 3, pretty obviously didn't work out. Hezonja at 5, Cauley Stein at 6, Moutier at 7, Stan Johnson at 8, Frank Kaminsky at 9. All of these guys would have been significantly overrated in a dynasty draft based on the unknown of where what their value is going to be. And it does put you at a disadvantage when you waste a top 50, top 60, top 70 pick on one of these guys who never pans out. In terms of how my projections would look, again, I do generally go in and draft based off this season's numbers with guys getting significant discounts. But if I'm there and Chris Paul's sitting there at pick 55 in an initial dynasty draft, I'll grab him and I'll really try and push forward and win, get the prize money this year, and then maybe, you know, look at a rebuild 2 years down the track. Because, you know, winning a dynasty league, especially in a deeper type thing, 20 teams, it's not an easy thing to do. So if you've got the opportunity to scoop up 3-4 rounds worth of value, 50 spots worth of value on a player, just because in 2 years' time they may not be good anymore, but that gives you a chance to win now, I think you've got to do it. Now, that doesn't mean sacrificing the future and just mortgaging all of your draft picks to be able to do that. And yeah, selling some of them off can be good. And depending on how your league is set up, that might be an idea in terms of, yes, selling some future assets to completely win now, but you've got to be all in on that sort of thing. But you'll find that young players get significantly overrated when we're looking at it, or there's a lot of hope being put onto these guys that they're going to turn out to be these players that we all know we're going to get 30, 40% bust rate of top 10 draft players, of guys who don't turn out to be any good. And that can obviously screw up a dynasty team. Whereas guys who are, you know, there's 20 to 30 guys at the moment, Bradley Beal, perhaps you're looking at someone like Drew Holiday, perhaps it is Paul George. You're going to get that sort of production for the next 2 to 3 years and you're going to be feeling pretty good. But look at guys, the first 2 years of an NBA player's career, they're not that good. You know, 3 to 4 years when they start to step up, but it's really years 6 to 7 that they start to really push in to become solid players. And that's the peak level of an NBA player's career. And then it's the perfect intersection between, you know, increasing mental ability and decreasing physical ability. And then after that, while the mental and understanding of the game tends to improve, the body's ability to process that information at an acceptable level does start to drop off after, say, age 29, 30, and that's when that value drops away. So that's the way I like to look at it, Thomas, is I like to draft for the now in a major aspect. You know, someone like LeBron, I wouldn't take him in the top 10, but if he's sitting there at pick 18, I would grab him. And I would take that, and then I would try and build more of a win now situation around it. Say, in this draft, LeBron went at pick 13. And I think that's totally fine to grab LeBron there. We also had Steph Curry at pick 12, which, you know, I think is fantastic value with the team that grabbed both of those guys there. And he was still able to grab some younger players. Jamal Murray in round 4. He grabbed Wendell Carter in round 6 because he had that really solid, you know, value base early on. And so I'm not going to be the person who comes in here and takes Doncic at pick 15 or takes Ayton at pick 16 or anything like that. And while they may get to that level, they also may not. It is hard to find players. It is hard to be a top 10 player in the NBA. So if someone is currently a top 10 or top 15 fantasy, like in general, they're going to stick there pretty regularly. And getting into that area, yeah, might be a tough thing. Now, you might have taken Karl Anthony Towns at pick 40 in a dynasty league 4 years ago, and now he's like a top 2, top 3 type of guy. And of course, there is value there, but you've also got to balance it up against the downside of taking Jahlil Okafor at pick 40, and now he's not really even in the league anymore. And that is somewhat of a risk. It's more of a ballsy strategy, and you can do that. I tend to go the other way because there tends to be definite value that presents by grabbing some of these players that fall, but really bearing in mind that drop-off zone around the age of 30 is something to bear in mind. And I usually look at things with somewhat of a 3-year window. So players who are 30 at the moment, they're probably guys I'm starting to avoid. If the value is still there, I will grab them. 27 is right on the sweet spot of where you're looking at the age of those guys. So that's how I like to look at it. I'm still working on algorithmic and mathematical stuff to try and be able to project these guys' stats out. But so much of projecting players' stats out is situation dependent, and NBA teams changing over 6 or 7 guys on a roster every 2 to 3 years means that the context in which these guys play, who they're playing with, what their role is, changes so dramatically. So, you know, we can do projections on per minute basis of how, you know, guys will likely decline and move forward, and their advanced numbers, how that looks at, which is what I'm looking at with the peak PIPM stuff, looking at these players becoming so good that they have to force themselves into larger roles. And you can, you know, I've got a whole bunch of fantasy correlations with that peak PIPM stuff as well that you can ask me about. But that's the way that I tend to look at it, Thomas. That's it for today's little dynasty segment. See you guys.